are doing a special class called The Playground of Time. I absolutely love this subject, and it is very important. It is one of the foundations of what we need to be able to continue our work towards enlightenment. And so I've taught two classes that are related to this. I might call them our Applied Multidimensionality Trio of Classes. The other two are The Equations of Enlightenment and Soul Skills 101, and this is the third part of that series. And these pieces all together create a really excellent foundation for us to continue to move ahead in higher consciousness. So this is a very spectacular place to end our little series, and I'm very glad to discuss it with you. So in our class today, we're going to cover what is time, what are timelines, we're going to talk about jumping timelines, time loops, and how to use time more effectively, why you might want to do that, and how you can help your family and friends use time better without a big giant fight. So that's what we're going to be focusing in on today, and of course taking questions after each section. All right, so let's begin, of course, with defining time. So as you know, I have a scientific background, and you know what? Nobody in science really truly agrees exactly about what time is. And that's funny, because in spirituality, we have a very grand, interesting viewpoint about time. It fits more, actually, to take a look at time in a spiritual way than, say, a scientific way. Because time is all about memory. Memory is, of course, not our own, but the memory of the source field containing all possibilities. And in these bodies, we get to enjoy the function of linear time, and that's a very special thing. We will discuss why that's so important and beautiful, why we need to value linear time so much. But time itself is really the memory of the source field containing all possibilities. This container is something that we call the universe. And the universe is actually sort of an experiment. It's a thought process, a grandiose one. So if you can possibly imagine that creator source field, of course, creating all universes, that would be the multiverse. All these universes are like an experiment, a thought, a question. And this particular universe, and all of time, is here to answer one question. What is love? All possibilities here exist to answer that single question. And that leads us to talk about, well, what are timelines? Timelines are linear strands of time which vary by possibility, choice, and events. Many elements go into timelines and how they dance together. There's all these parallel timelines constantly working together next to each other. In one of them, you had tea this morning instead of coffee. In another one, you had matcha. In another, you had chai. And in another one, you didn't have anything at all. And these are defined by your personal choice in these linear timelines. And we get to experience only one. But it is something that we're constantly choosing. And so these timelines are very fluid. It's not like a path that you're stuck on or a container that you can't shift out of. And what makes timelines shift is very complex, so we're going to talk about that too. But as for us, in the moment, as we're choosing a particular timeline, that choice is very vital. That's free will. And with free will, we're able to say, well, what do I want the timeline to look like every moment? That's amazing. And And that's why people can't see the future. Yes, there is prophecy. It's true. But true, actual, being able to say 100% that something is going to be happening in the future is pretty much impossible. And take it from me, I studied predictive models for a very long time. I really wanted so much to have a way to tell what the future was going to hold. But in that journey of discovering time in that way and change, I realized that it is human choice in the moment, and it is, of course, that beautiful free will where we get to decide what those timelines look like. You have so much more power than it might seem over these timelines. And so we get to add to the body of memory with our free will. We get to add to the body of memory that Source maintains by helping Source learn about itself and answer, of course, that beautiful question, what is love? We are strands of Source consciousness adding to the info feedback loop that continues to answer that question. So when we talk about time in this way, what comes up for you? Before I get into jumping timelines and talking about time loops, I'm wondering what's on your mind about time. Does this definition of time and timelines resonate with you? Very good. So if you'd like to speak with me live, you can press star 2. You can type in a question or comment in the comment box if you are on the webcast. And certainly that will be a good place for us to address any questions that are on your mind or comments. Susan says, my dreams are becoming more real. What's going on? Yes, so with that, you know, what's going on, for example, with Dreamland? How is Dreamland related to time? Dreamland's really interesting because it's where we get to tap in a little bit more to some of these other dimensions that we reside in. Because you know what? We don't actually just reside in the 3D. We have access to all dimensions, and the soul itself resides in the fourth dimension, in the spiritual plane. And in Dreamland, we get to play around with timelines in a little bit of a different way. We get to experiment with the strangeness and the wonders of time. And often we can tap into different aspects of the future and past that we couldn't normally do so in our waking life. So if your dreams are becoming more real, it's actually probably because of the way the Earth is maintaining her energetic status and helping us to tap into higher dimensions. And we will be talking about that more. Good. So just wanted to make sure that that resonates with you. If you don't have any questions, that's great. Now, let's move forward. Let's look at how to jump timelines. What is jumping timelines all about exactly? Well, I'd like to kind of take you on a little bit of a different mindset about timelines and moving from timeline to timeline. When we say jumping timelines, it sort of sounds like you're jumping from one bridge to another bridge. And that's not exactly how it works. It's much more fluid than that. There's many layers and levels of how time can fluidly work. So with your personal choice each moment, you can put power and velocity behind a timeline that you would like to open up. That would be one form of having more control over timelines or jumping a timeline. But then there's all these outside factors, all these layers of reality that can cause time jumps to happen anyway. So if you can imagine a kaleidoscope, sometimes the kaleidoscope will stay the same for a while, and then something big happens, something out of our control, something that's huge, that's part of another layer of reality, like, for example, an earthquake. And then the kaleidoscope shifts because that earthquake had an outside influence on the timeline. It can be something as simple as that, or even more complex, like the collective of the Earth, all the human beings on the planet, having a choice point in time and deciding that they, in fact, do want unification, or that they're tired of all the corrupt systems and they want out of slavery, which has happened. And that actually caused a giant timeline shift for our human race. So it can be complicated about how time shifts and flows from one timeline to another. In that case, then, the place where we have all the power is in the moment, and in your life in the moment too. With that knowledge that, hey, we're here to surrender to a certain amount of flow, but also to play a part like an instrument. Each timeline is like a string on an instrument, and it resonates in a certain way, and we want to be able to play the song in harmony with the universe. And we might say now at this time that we're getting better at waking up. Humans are really, truly waking up all over the world. We're really waking up, and we're starting to realize that our song is not in harmony. It's very uncomfortable, isn't it? You can feel that the instrument of time and timelines and activities and personal choice, the collective, and of course the Earth, her role that she plays for us too, that these things are not quite right. There's some disharmony going on, and we're here to wake up and make sure that that harmony can be played more perfectly. So jumping timelines is more like flowing timelines. And with that, then we can recognize we're in these beautiful boats in this flow, and we get to say, well, I want to go that direction towards a permanent golden age. And we keep every moment making sure we are navigating energy, that we are navigating these dimensions, that we're navigating power and light in that moment in the direction that we want to go. That's how we want to be able to view time, timelines, and jumping timelines. It's about power, personal power, and putting that in practice each moment. And then there's this really fascinating thing called time loops. Because time's all one big, beautiful thing, that memory doesn't go away. So, for example, in a 3D discussion, when I was a lot younger, one of the skills I realized I had was I can walk into an ancient building, or any building, really, and tell you what's happened there, like a movie being played backwards. This was actually one of the things that led me to want to go into science, because I figured that I was seeing something that might be scientifically explainable. And what I discovered is that in quantum physics, there is no time that goes away. It's layers and layers of memory in the material, embedded in the quantum light information that is the source field memory. So that means that all the different yous from this moment backwards to your entry into this earth plane, that they're still here. And that actually has a profound effect on us, because a lot of those yous and me's are traumatized. And so that trauma is something that often will rule our lives. I'm sure you've noticed that a lot of the people around you seem to be sort of stuck at the age where they were most traumatized. And that's a very common thing. The fact is all those traumatized versions of themselves were compartmentalized in the embodiment, just like a house with lots of quantum memory. And that those traumatized selves are still traumatized. They are not getting their needs met. And so they rule the house. They rule the house with their whining, their screaming, their crying, their trauma. And that is what will rule a person until they address that underlying trauma. So one of the ways I've figured out how to help heal all these different versions of us is what I call healing the subconscious selves, or in this case, we could say healing the old traumatized versions of us that haven't gone anywhere, because they need their needs met still. So only you can do that, because only you, with your embodiment, can tap into all of those aspects. Just like it's as if the house was your body, you've inherited it, but you're the only one with the keys. And so as you're recognizing that, hey, I have these different needs that come up that are deep emotional triggers, this is painful, this is making me react in different ways. And you can probably follow that thread back to, well, it's because this happened to me in the past. So notice your reactions and triggers and then follow the thread and find who is it that's really running the show in your mind in that moment. And I'll give you an example. So for myself, I had a traumatized four-year-old, and she was in Germany and had watched Chernobyl affect the area. She was in the fallout. It was all very traumatizing and weird and scary. And she was really absolutely not feeling safe. And this caused my body to go into a lot of physical PTSD issues. Constantly, just hypervigilance all the time. Many of us can relate to that. And it's, of course, one of the things that had happened to me. And so she was there, and certain events would happen or news that I would read or hear, and then she'd get triggered. I don't feel safe. So I followed that thread of that feeling, and I found her there. And in order to help her heal, I created a time loop. And this might be like a branch off of the time that she was in, so that she can have a new experience without having a new timeline, which would mess up time. So the time loop still loops back into my own timeline, and the loop starts with me in the present and then meets her where she's at and then loops back. So if you can imagine that thread of time that we're on, it's a flow that's constantly changing and resonating, but then we go back into the embodiment where the memory is being stored, that source field memory about my four-year-old self, and we create a new situation for her. So in tapping into her in the past, I can ask her, what do you really need? I want to feel safe. So then I create a place, a spiritual place on the fourth dimension where she can reside. And that is very profound. We co-create it together. What do you want to help you feel safe? So for her, she wanted a secret garden. She loved that movie. And she wanted to have a secret garden of her own with a Victorian tea set and everything. So we created that. Lots of roses. And I asked her, once she felt comfortable and safe, if she'd like to stay there. And then, of course, she did. And then the charge and the trauma was taken off of my timeline without changing the value and the importance of the events that had happened to me. So time loops can be an incredible tool for healing. And so simply, if we were to discuss it in a point by point, how to use time loops, find your trigger, follow the thread, see if you find a traumatized self at the end. I like to then separate myself from them by asking, well, what are they wearing exactly? And it doesn't matter what age. It could be an adult part of you. It could be a child, a teenager, whatever. And so you'd say, well, what are they wearing exactly? And that helps you to have a separated moment. And then you'll ask them, what do you really need? And they're going to tell you a list of things they really need. And don't forget to work on your baby self, too. You know, birth is really traumatic. and that can be a huge shift in the body when you heal your baby self. And so then you ask, well, what do they really need? And then you start to co-create. Well, let's find a place where we can meet these needs. And in that case, anything goes, because this is spiritual imagination you're working with. So anything goes. You could be on a different planet in a different time if she wants, or he. And it doesn't matter. It could be on a spaceship. It could be here on Earth at a different time. This time loop can be anything. It's simply there to help the traumatized version of you be happier and get their needs met so that they're not constantly running the house anymore. And so if that's the case, then you'll find that the emotions subside, the pain subsides, the part of you starts to feel more comfortable and happy, and that's when you ask, do you want to stay here? And then, of course, they're probably going to say yes, and so you let them know, I'm always here for you, and you can stay here. And then the charge is lifted off of your actual timeline, the real one, where all that stuff happened. But then you can value it in a new way, as a thing that helped you to grow and something that you were able to learn from, at least. And of course, at most, being able to attain a lot more unconditional love and compassion. Good. So I feel that this particular part around working with time can be a very invaluable tool. I hope that you'll be able to utilize it. Does anyone have any questions about timelines, jumping timelines, time loops, and navigating time? If you do, go ahead and press star 2 if you'd like to speak with me about it, or you can type into the board, of course. All right. So Celine asks, how much freedom does one's timeline have relative to the collective timeline? Does one trump over the other? The string is always part of the musical instrument, as the string cannot make music without the rest of the instrument. Yes, in this case, the instrument is the universe, but there's layers of instruments. Our body is an instrument that has a huge effect over time. And so how much freedom do we have relative to the collective timeline? Well, that's sort of like saying, how much freedom do we have if we decide to traverse the open ocean? Well, the collective timeline could be considered the currents. Sometimes we can drop into the currents and they're going the direction we want, and sometimes not. And maybe the wind is the galactic energies. Occasionally the wind is silent, and then other times it's too stormy to move forward. And other times it's actually helpful and gets you where you want to go. So it's hard for me to actually give a percentage of importance, because every single piece is important, including your specific design and the way that you are playing the instrument of time too. So in this case, I'd say there's 100% choice. Freedom isn't really something we can discuss in this case, because if you're really out there navigating time and energy in a conscious way, every moment you make choices in order to stay on a specific path or to put power behind something you want to unfold. And that freedom is really relative, because if you're not in the body and you're not in a functioning and grounding things in the 3D, well, then you're in a different dimension altogether. And from there, different energies of choice and freedom look different. It gets more formless. So it's hard for me to say, hey, well, you have 100% freedom, or the collective has 100% say over it. It's not really like that. So I want you to use that traversing the ocean metaphor the best you can in this case, and we might call the collective the currents, and the galactic influence the wind. And even though that might be, you know, a very material 3D metaphor, it's probably the best we can use in this case, because we're talking about a field of information that's intimately connected. It might be even safer to say that we're completely in the ocean, but that might leave us from being able to connect to the galactic as well. So I'm sorry that I can't answer it as a relative answer, but I can definitely say that the instrument is multi-layered, and one of those instruments is you. So, very good. And for those of you who want to chat with me live, just a quick note that if you're on the webcast, there is a delay. And so that can be sometimes happen with instant teleseminar. All right. So, Nikki, you have a question. Very good. How can I serve you today? What's your question, Nikki? I think you might be mute. There you are. Hi.
Hi. What is my question? God, I have so many questions about what you just said. Because a lot of this really is not in sync with what some of my brain's belief system is.
Absolutely.
So I'm trying to, you know, bypass that a little bit and go into what you're saying. So when people talk about, I'm thinking about the loop, the way that you talked about the loop, and I actually did that with your recommendation regarding birth trauma, me giving birth, but anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yes, yes.
The point is that it seemed to be very successful, because in terms of trauma, when I think about that event, I have a much different,
right?
I guess, response, you know, mostly gut response to the whole experience. But so the emotional piece is changed significantly.
Yes, and that's what we want. That would be a measurable result.
Yeah, and so the way we talked about it that day was that she's, I hate to say out on a limb, but, you know, she's on one possible timeline, and we hopefully recreated a different scenario than the one I had previously experienced in my 3D reality. So does
Correct.
That, is that a loop? In other words, did I bring her back in some kind of unknown way? Did I bring her back into my present timeline, or is that, because it was trauma, something that we would willingly, consciously leave sort of at a dead end?
Yeah, we don't want to leave it at a dead end. The way that it is a loop is that because you at this time made this conscious choice to interface with her, help her set up a different situation, it's not necessarily parallel, because it does actually come back to you in the moment. So it is technically a loop. And so that she lives on the loop, and then it meets back where you're at, and then you're affected by that change. And that's what we are noticing. That's that measurable effect from putting her on the loop.
So one could say that I've integrated that new scenario into my current being, my
exactly.
current reality.
Yes.
Okay. And then how is that different, that loop, how is that different from what we talk about collapsing a timeline? Or are you going to talk about that separately?
Well, actually, I don't believe in collapsing timelines. I think it's really interesting that people say that kind of thing.
Okay.
That's not at all what I perceive. I don't think timelines collapse at all. I think that they end up actually just working the same way as water. I'm actually kind of slowly trying to draw everybody away from thinking of timelines as these very structured, narrow things. And kind of leading everybody into formlessness, actually, and timelessness, which is going to be my goal slowly over this class. But I'm taking you into a place where time is all one thing. And time doesn't collapse. It's a function of the source field. And so it can't collapse. I do think that if people are saying, like, oh, well, timelines collapsed and we felt it, might simply be another way of talking about how energies will change and shift and how, for example, sometimes, like, a great example is the Earth. The Earth, she's a conscious being, and she made a choice point, several choice points over the past couple of years, for example, that completely changed all the possibilities for us. It's as if a big tsunami wave came, picked us up, and stuck us into a whole different set of timelines, really. And that's great, because energy and the source field memory flows like that. But she's a player in this, just like each individual person is a player in it. And that's how I view it. So thank you for mentioning that.
Okay. So maybe what you're saying in terms of loops.
Yes.
Is what some people perceive as collapsing, because I really resonate with the first part when you talked about those layers, because if it's all, you know, if there's no past, present, future, it's all now, then when we're looking at those other experiences, whatever they are, they still exist.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yes,
so I can
absolutely
see where maybe that is kind of a false concept that's really well accepted in the spiritual community. I hear people talking about collapsing timelines frequently.
I know. And I know, and all of you know how I teach too. Sometimes I end up saying the exact opposite. And that's kind of my style. But yes, and I have a big goal point here too, because this view of time that we are taught in the spiritual community, and then like this, again, even in the scientific community, it's all very strange. And none of them really mesh together, and none of them really give you a full picture either. And I actually am taking my concept of time from Nassim Harriman, who's a quantum physicist. I think he's more spot on than anybody. And he's pointing out that the mathematics show that the source field has a function that is memory, and that that's what we perceive as time. And that to me feels so right. It describes what I'm seeing, all these particles of consciousness. And it also makes linear time so magical. It makes linear time so awesome. People keep not wanting to live in linear time because it's hard. It can be very hard, especially when we're living in the 3D on a planet that's got corruption going on and all of that during a huge collapse and rebuilding of our systems. It's rough. But I want to try to help people step into an awe, a special love of linear time today. Because that is something amazing that we're not truly using to its full potential.
Okay. Yeah, very exciting that it's really, I mean, because I'm so used to the, you know, there's no such thing as time. And so the idea of memory being something different than linear time is very intriguing.
Yeah, yeah, it is, because the memory then makes the whole seem oh, okay, so it's one big, huge, whole experience. And then it brings it all together. It is an interesting equation, and certainly as we move forward, we'll be dropping into even stranger places, like timelessness.
Well, and it makes dimensions, and that
yep.
the multidimensionality also just makes perfect sense, and dream and everything, because it's all happening now.
Correct. And then it also helps us understand, okay, why does this universe exist even at all? And it is to be able to answer a specific question. And in order to do that, the field has to have memory. The field itself that creates this whole entire universe has to have memory in order to do that, in order to discover that. So each of us are simply a strand of consciousness feeding back into that memory field. And we experience mm-hmm. it in the moment as linear time. And
mm-hmm.
there's a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you get all the really good, juicy stuff.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to meet
you. You're
myself.
Welcome. I always love your questions. Thank you, Nikki. Good, okay. So let's check our Q&A board again and see if we have any more questions. Very good. All right, so let's take a look at this, using time more effectively. Now you know my opinion on collapsing time, and certainly, you know, play with this. I'm going to just say this because I feel it's important. I have my own perspective, my own path, the way I've learned, my own history of learning, my own experiences, and the way that I teach, I came into spiritual work from science. So I have a very different viewpoint than the average spiritual teacher. But at the same time, I'm not going to be here saying that you must absolutely believe everything I say, because I'm still learning every day, thank God. And in that, in each moment, I like to then just share what I think I know. And you know what? By golly, I know so little. But the thing is that by sharing this, then, we open up in ourselves a chance to discern the truth. So while I speak about this next piece, because it's probably the heart of this whole talk, I want you to notice your heart and your gut. Fall into your heart, fall into your gut, and really check with them. Does this feel true? Does what I have said feel true? How does your body react as I'm speaking? I want you to use your whole body experience to discern what is true and what is real. So use today's class, especially with this really interesting and tricky discussion around something so formless and esoteric, use that as a chance to discern for yourself. That is much, much more important to me than anything. Very good. Okay, so let's move forward to talking about how to use time more effectively. I have two tricks that I like to use all the time. I do it constantly. It keeps me sane. So I'm very glad to pass them on. They really work wonders. And a lot of awakened people that I've had sessions with talk about how useful these tools have been. So the first one is what I call the XY axis of time. Since we are in linear time, we want to then envision, perhaps, the timelines that we're flowing into and throughout as perhaps the x-axis, where there is the past, there is the future, and we are in the moment. That's what linear time feels like. It feels like you're on a line. That's why we say timelines. It feels like you're on a line. You're on a frequency, you're on a resonance, you're on a string of the instrument, and you're playing that string. But there is the past about how you played it before, and there's the future about how you might play it. And, of course, that future is not certain at any time because, of course, all these factors then, these layers of reality play into how that future may look and your personal free will choice as well. Well, what the average person experiences on that x-axis is a lot of grief and suffering. And it's because of two things. First, we worry about the past. We worry about the past in a lot of ways. The main one being, a lot of times we don't want the past to show up again. We don't want it to be a repeat. Most of us have had repeat experiences of trauma that are very similar. So you'll notice that there is, a genuine fear of the past and the past repeating itself. And it's something people who have been traumatized really worry about. And the worry might not show up as directly you laying in bed saying, oh my gosh, I hope the past doesn't repeat itself. It instead might look like just a low-level constant anxiety, a low-level constant thinking about different past points, and sometimes even it's showing up in your dreams, past people that you've had interactions with constantly coming through in the dreams like, oh, wow, of course, great, I had to have that crazy dream about that ex-boyfriend or whatever. But that's how we know we suffer with this worrying about the past coming to haunt us again. And this is a very important piece because you're leaking a huge amount of energy. If we were to then use another visual metaphor here, and trying to bring all these different metaphors in to make sense of something incredibly esoteric. But another metaphor might be the past is like all these different doorways. Some of them are open and leaking all this cold, yucky, traumatized wind and air through, and it chills you. It's just constantly there. It causes anxiety because you can't seem to shake it. Every time you keep trying to close all the doors, one of them ends up staying open, or some traumatized version of yourself keeps pounding on the walls and won't let you close doors until they get what they want, which is healing. But this is a huge part of human suffering, that we leak all this energy. It gets sort of sucked away from you all the time from a difficult past. And then, of course, there's the future, which is in some ways even more painful. People worry so much about paying bills, about making enough money to eat, about meeting the next deadline. They worry about the future constantly. And this leaks a huge amount of energy, too, and creates an incredible amount of suffering. So I want you to notice that. Notice that right away in your daily life. Where are your thoughts? Where are your efforts? Where's your energy going? Is it leaking into the past and the future? Along that compartmentalized version of your timeline? And how can you shift out of it? Well, the first thing is to notice it, to self-assess, right? You'll hear me say this in the Equations of Enlightenment, one of those equations being self-assessment, processing, and meditation. And so self-assessment in this case is very key. And if we would call, say, maybe healing the past, maybe working with timeline loops to help heal those traumatized versions of yourself so all those doors can be shut finally and you can feel more comfortable in the present and not so tied to the traumas of the past that pull on you. So that might be one way, but you got to notice it. You got to notice, oh, I'm suffering right now. I'm thinking about how that didn't go well and it hurts. And let me go back in time to feel into where is that suffering come from? Comes from that particular event or that place in time. And that's really beneficial for us to think about. So we can say, how can I heal this past trauma in the moment right now? That's one way you're going to be able to address the leakage into the past. And then, of course, we can say, how can I put power behind what I want for my future in the moment now? And we get all our power back. We get all our access to something even bigger and more beautiful back. Because we're not going to sit there and worry about anymore about all the different factors we have control over or don't have control over and how that future is going to unfold. We're taking all our power back and we're saying, I'm in charge of making the choices on this tricky path to figure out how I'm going to get to this future that I want. And that's free will and that is choice. So that's what I want to encourage you to start with. Start with finding your zero point on the XY axis. You are right at the heart of that axis. Your consciousness comes in on that timeline into a special place in time that has all your free will tied to it. So as you're then focusing all your power and energy and your mental stamina on the now, like a navigator in the ocean. You're not worrying about what's going to be there when you get to the next island. You're not worrying about the island you left. You are only concerned about the very moment and how you can bring back all your power so you can focus on getting to where you need to go. That's incredibly valuable. You are the zero point on any timeline. That's where your soul comes in. Nowhere else. Your soul doesn't come in the past or the future. It comes in now, every moment, building that powerful feedback loop to Source so Source can answer this great grand question about what is love. And then we have the Y axis. The Y axis goes straight up and down through you, straight up and down through you, through down into the quantum, down into the source field and all of its memory, your access point. You're an anchor point in the source field. I'm going to say that again. You are an anchor point of consciousness in the source field. You have access to the entire source field and all of its knowledge and wisdom and memory from the quantum. And then you also have access to the galactic. You have access to all layers of reality, all dimensions, and the Y-axis. The Y-axis moving straight up and down into reality. And you can, with your consciousness, your powerful, amazing, brilliant consciousness, you can zoom in and out of reality along that timeline. This is what keeps me sane. And so I gift it to you too. Please zoom in and out. Notice what you find. Zoom in and out of reality. In the moment, you can zoom into the quantum and discover what's going on there at that level of reality. You can zoom out to the collective and give the collective a hug. For all you empaths out there who can feel the collective, one nice thing I've been trying out with different people who are empaths that I work with is having them zoom out and give the collective a hug every time they feel the pressure from the collective or the suffering from the collective. So instead of hiding, we might treat the collective like a friend who needs help, and they just need a hug. And if you zoom out and you give them a hug, and then you zoom back into whatever you're doing in the 3D layer of reality that you're in that moment, then you'll actually find you feel better because you were able to give something really special, and the pressure from the collective then won't be as challenging. Give that a try. It's a nice little trick for you empaths out there. And so zooming in and out, zoom out to the edge of the universe, go look at this crazy multiverse I'm talking about, all those other universes out past the void, and look into the universe. Go and examine different galaxies. There's no limits when you zoom in and zoom out. Human beings, we use these bodies and our souls expertly to be able to go discover true reality using our imaginations, using the power of our soul and our third eye. And this can be a great, beautiful way for you to interact with all the layers that are affecting time and your experience. If you're feeling a planetary shift, zoom out and look at Mother Earth and check in with her. If you're feeling a local shift in your little town, zoom out a little bit and check it out. See what's going on. If you're feeling it from the inside, zoom in. Zoom in and look. Take a look. And take a look at all of the powerful energy that is available when you zoom in so far that you hit the source field itself. Go hang out there in meditation and see what it's like. So that is a really valuable way for you to be able to step into the moment more powerfully. So just to recap, notice that you leak energy into the past and future. Notice that you worry about the past and future. I do. I notice it. And I'm getting better and better at not leaking energy, especially into the future. And that one's my tricky one because I'm kind of obsessed with change and wanting to understand time and all of this stuff. But with that, getting all that power back in the moment. Now, I need to explain to you why we really want to do this. I've described, obviously, you know, some shifting of suffering out of the way. That would be a really great reason to do it. But I want to give you something even bigger to tap into, a bigger reason why you're going to want to use time in this way. So, in this moment, we have an opening to several things. The moment opens us up into several things, the present. First, we have this opening into timelessness. And timelessness is the realization that time is all one. It's the oneness of time. That's why that metaphor of the ocean might work better than, say, lots of strings of time. Because when you're looking at the ocean, it looks like one big, huge thing. It's actually all these little molecules and all these little atoms combined together in endless amounts. But at the same time, from our view in this 3D body, it looks like one big, huge body of water. And that's how this universe is. It's one big, huge body of energy. This body of energy has memory, and of course, it's also very formless and timeless. So that's why that's very important for us to tap into, is that you get to access timelessness in the moment. And from that moment, you can leap into formlessness. And this is important. These are two very ancient concepts, timelessness and formlessness. And a couple of years ago, I had an incredible vision. I saw that timelessness and formlessness would act like wings for humanity. And this was going to help us ascend faster by tapping into timelessness and formlessness. And hey, if you want a quicker way, then use these two things. Use the present moment to tap into timelessness first, and then you'll gently be guided into formlessness. So why is formlessness so important? Why do we want to access that? Well, let me give you a picture of where we're at right now. Right now, the triad of the 6th, 7th, and 8th dimensions, which aren't really compartmentalized at all. They're just layers of reality and light with different qualities of formless light. And the higher you go, quote-unquote higher, you're really just getting closer to source where everything is complete and utter formlessness. So that's why we say higher, but it's not really higher. It's just closer to the source field where it all comes in. Because you know what? This universe has a 0.2 where the consciousness of source began this universe. It does have a heart, and that's where that 0 point is. And as you're getting closer to that 0 point, then you're really technically going into more formless dimensions. But the Earth, this triad of 6, 7, and 8 dimensions, has been embodied by the planet many hundreds of years sooner than expected. Why? How did that happen? Well, the divine feminine and the divine masculine ushered this in. They ushered it in over the past couple of years using mercy and now the high heart of unconditional love. The high heart of this unconditional love is very neutral and is able to experience the whole universe as one beautiful thing, including all of the dark, with total unconditional love and neutrality. Now, these two energies of mercy and this neutral, very high-level unconditional love has allowed the Earth to shake off a lot of density and to then now embody 6, 7, and 8 dimensions of light, more formless light than before. So here we are, and all of us are experiencing this. That's why everything seems so strange and why it's just getting stranger. And that's why dreams are getting crazier. That's why everything seems to be moving faster, yet not at all. All these different aspects of formlessness. And of course, timelessness too. But this does something really special for you as an individual. In formlessness, you can awaken your formless light body, which is your soul. And in timelessness, you can access your full remembrance, your full soul history. That's why we want to ground ourselves in the present and use its power, because that's actually the whole goal, to fully be in the soul 100% with access to all that knowledge and wisdom from your strand of consciousness. There is no separation from you and all of that wisdom in the moment. There is separation when you're worrying about the future or the past. And that's why the moment is so profound. It's seriously good news. All this work that the primordial, divine, original, masculine, and feminine have done, because they're combining like two tectonic plates, very different plates. They're not losing their individuality, but just like the yin-yang, they're creating a new entry point, a new playing field for us that is much, much more formless and that will allow us to leap into higher consciousness. So this ancient original energy, these very intelligent aspects of the galaxy, of the universe, have actually shifted our timeline on Earth to better set us up. And why? What are they setting us up for? To collapse all of these broken, corrupt systems, to balance the shadow and light, and to simultaneously rebuild while it all collapses. It's a kind of a double job. We don't have time to collapse it all and then suffer a whole bunch as we try to rebuild. We got to rebuild while it collapses. But we're clever. We've done this before. And as you tap into your soul histories, many of you will remember this stuff. You'll remember about how you did this on other planets and those lifetimes where this challenge was met with great grace. So it's going to basically lead us more easily into the permanent golden age. It's sort of like I said, the earth, the divine feminine and the divine masculine created a giant wave of energy multiple times that moved us in our little boats to the edge of another realm of time, a more timeless and formless realm, one where oneness is the norm. And this is amazing. So right now we're watching the collapse, like this slow motion dismantling, simultaneously rebuilding with light, even in the fray of all the chaos. This is hard work. And I want to point something out, because I've been a bridge, even though I'm not an empath. And I've been playing around with feeling a lot more, which is really an important part of discernment for me. And I don't know how empaths do it, really. I'm quite happy to just be a seer. But seriously, all of you empaths out there are really important in this part. We need you to continually, energetically allow the debris of this collapsed matrix to be shifted by your field. And you don't have to necessarily do that consciously. You can just allow it. That's the thing about being an empath. Empaths often will try to identify the debris. That's not your job. Don't try to identify it anymore. Let it move. Let it shift. It just wants to use your huge, giant hurricane energy, your human vortex, to get it to where it needs to go, where it's going to be more balanced. And then the thing you can consciously do is to allow it to move through this field of yours, not through you, but just using your field as like a fast track out of here. And then you can consciously continue to refill it all with light. And that is actually the foundation of the rebuilding of our planet. So all of you empaths play a very key role in this. And that's really special. So from our personal experiences in the moment, where all that power is, all that light, we each have that special role in the next leap in global consciousness, in galactic consciousness, not just our own. And from the present moment, we get to tap into all the layers of time and wisdom, all that formless energy that is the body of memory of the source field. We can access all of your choice, all of our choice and free will more fully in the moment. So we can keep choosing to do this work, rebalancing the energy, surrendering to the flow, working on your own egoic structure. All this has this beautiful point to it. It leads us to the end of suffering. It leads us to a permanent golden age. And your present moment is tied to that grand flow of all the layers of reality. You have this incredible free will to use that power within you and in the 3D, in the material world, to truly manifest real light. And that really points to us saying, hey, what is my job here, really? We all have this job. To ground all that light in the moment, every moment, from all the dimensions into the now and into the 3D and the body. The anchor point is you, and it is in the moment. That, my friends, that's the gift of linear time. We can't beat up on linear time anymore. It's our most precious gift, and the true access point to the new playing field that is formlessness. So it's amazing news I have to give to you that this is where we're at energetically. This is a choice point that we have been waiting for so long. And thank goodness it's here. And now you get to actually fully take part in that formless playing field and keep backing into source. You keep becoming more formless while still being in the 3D. Is it easy? No. No, it's not easy, but you know, we advance ourselves so much and we advance the memory of the source field. We help by answering this incredible question simply by existing. I hear people say, well, I just don't want to be here anymore. It's because they don't have a good reason to be here anymore. This is a good reason to be here because you're helping to add and finalize all the finishing touches of this great grand experiment trying to discover what is love. You are helping Source every moment. You are Source in each moment. And you have access to all of that light, all of that power. Good. Okay, so before we get into helping our family and friends who might not actually believe any of this stuff or whatever is going on for them, how do we help the people around us? Let's take some more questions. If you'd like to speak live, you can press star 2. And we're taking a look at our board here. Very good. Yeah. Okay, so if you want to type in any questions on the Q&A board, I'm looking there too, or speak live. Do you have any comments, any questions going on? All right, so that's okay. And if I'm just not seeing them showing up right now yet, oh, here we go. Now we got someone. From Bakersfield, California. Hi there.
Hi, this is Alicia. Actually, I'm
Hi,
in Hawaii.
Alicia.
My comment is thank you so much. I greatly appreciate all the information you're giving. It's very timely.
Perfect. I couldn't agree more. I've been building up to this class and really looking at my own relationship with time too, because it's never perfect, of course. But wow, I had someone ask me recently, how can you live such a 3D life and yet work with so much light? Because I have a family. I have little bitty children, a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 16-year-old. I have a working farm. I have a house. I have a very, very 3D life. And how can I do both? And to me, that's the whole job. That's the whole point. And do I do it, you know, 100% perfect? No, definitely not. But I'm constantly trying to bring in all these higher formless states of light into the moment, watching how they affect my household, my family, my farm, and getting that feedback information that lets me know that I'm on the right track or not. And that, to me, is how we can really utilize the 3D. We get to have that feedback immediately from the source field that's really precious. How am I doing right now in the moment? Am I actually grounding all this light and then watching it transform the people, places, and things around us in the 3D? And that would be how I would say we can measure the effects of our work in timelessness and in formlessness, by watching how the 3D feeds back to us. And right now, since the Earth is so wonderfully formless and she's shifting egoic structure off this planet, off of us, out of our experiences, one little tiny piece at a time dismantling it all, then we actually are in the perfect place to talk about this. So it all happened in divine timing. But thank you for your beautiful comment. It's very kind.
Mm-hmm. I love you. Hello,
oh, I
everyone.
Love you too. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's so kind.
Thank you.
Perfect. All right. And then we have Nikki. Nikki, what's on your mind about what we've been discussing?
So I just wanted to say this is a lot, and but what I'm wanting to say is two things. One is that this fits into everything that has been never sitting with me well regarding quote-unquote spirituality, and having come from, you know, a religious basis, being raised in a very religious kind of foundation in this lifetime, and then going into, you know, studying the other faiths that are predominant on the planet, it was always like something terribly wrong about this concept of enlightenment being related to leaving. And
right.
So I know that you've really helped to ground my belief about the 3D and the physical body and why we're here and bringing it into this reality through these vehicles, right? Rather than to leave them and transcend them and all of that. But this brings in another dimension, right? Because I drew a picture while you were speaking about the wings, so the formlessness and the timelessness, and then I put Mother Earth in between those wings, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so this time thing is the other piece of grounding that human reality.
Absolutely.
And then I just wanted to add, so that was one thing. So it's really beautiful because, you know, that visual is really magnificent in terms of Mother Earth and what she's doing and how, you know, I visualized her shaking like a dog does, you know, with all of these things flying off back into the door. These systems that are not working and that are, you know, kind of dragging us through the mud, if you will, instead of being able to flower and blossom.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to add in that, you know, what's really been coming home to me is the magnificence and importance of merging with the natural world in order to do this, and how much we need to do that as humans, that there are, you know, we're being taught constantly through the natural world how to do this, and we need to really unite to in any way we can bring the natural world into our lives to move on to the next level.
Yeah, and as folks practice zooming in a little bit, zoom into your own body, and you're going to find something amazing. Your body is the natural world.
Right. We have forests and everything.
Mm-hmm. Like, literally. Yeah, our bodies are the natural world. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And those fields of limitation, those structures, those systems, those matrices that have tried to separate us, it's all so obviously false at that point when you're realizing, wow, I'm a soul living in this incredible body, which is the natural world. It's a part of the natural world. It acts like the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
And that that helps a lot. That mindset shift will really help.
Mm-hmm. And the dis-ease is, you know, the absence of that knowledge. Acknowledgement.
Exactly. The disease is the resistance to that oneness. It's resistance to formlessness. Because in formlessness, well, guess what? You can't have an ego. I remember my own teacher saying, hey, you know, when I was working on embodying the eighth dimension, this incredible dimension of formlessness, I felt like I was going to die. And this was last year, and she went through this huge realization that she's like, well, I guess I'm just going to die. And she thought, well, my body can't handle the formlessness. And then she realized later, oh, it's not my body. My body was fine. It was my ego. The ego thinks it's going to die when it's going into this formlessness. That's why everyone's kind of freaking out a little bit. It's why the collective's freaking out. Because all
the
ego structure's getting shifted out, yeah.
I really feel like we have empathy for that feeling, because
I do too.
Not to get sucked into it, but to just understand the vastness of that experience of the ego dying. I mean, it's huge. It's a big deal for it, and we have to love it into formlessness.
That's right. Unconditional, neutral, high heart, merciful love. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got this lesson the past couple of years. This is what happened during the solstices. First, the big spiritual structures of the matrix were shifted off by the divine masculine using mercy. Not cruelty, not harshness, using mercy. And then, of course, the divine feminine came this past winter, and many of the teachers around me were recognizing that there was this sort of preparedness destruction thing going on, which is why I taught that whole class on preparedness, because I thought, as I was looking at it energetically, I wanted to get people to be conscious of being prepared physically for a possible gap point where we truly do collapse these physical aspects of what it was, the matrix, because the matrix was a multidimensional thing, and the outcome in the 3D looks like a corrupted culture, looks like corrupted systems and hierarchies, etc., incredible dualities of shadow and light. And so I wanted people to be prepared for a gap point where, hey, we've shifted all this structure out, and now all of our systems are all collapsed, and now what? And thankfully, all these incredible light workers are simultaneously rebuilding while the collapse is happening. That's why I keep saying to the empaths, let the debris use your field to move out where they need to go, and you consciously replace it with light. That's the spiritual foundation of what will become a very 3D, completely very, very different planet. And so,
yes,
it's going to take a long time.
You're doing the heart commands on a global level, basically.
Exactly, yes. And collective empaths and empaths across the board, that's what you're here to do. That's the job. It's not to identify the debris. That's my job. But that's what I am seeing right now. And wow, kudos for us, man, that we get to, we're so clever that we can rebuild while simultaneously allowing the collapse, watching the collapse. I mean, the Earth is setting us up for success. She's the one who's doing the collapsing. She's moving all the debris and structure and ego out of here right now. And it's all very subtle because it's formless. And you know why people aren't noticing the formlessness so much? Because it's formless. We're so used to the material, sometimes we forget to tap into the etheric and the formless. But it's there, and it's online. It's being embodied by the Earth.
And I think it's really important to remember the significance of you talking about so many of the people that have talked about, I've cleared, and
yes,
you've made a point repeatedly of talking about, well, when you clear, you need to fill that space with something else, and you may as well do it now and fill it with what you want, because otherwise so what I'm thinking is those structures that are collapsing, we need to go in and fill those spaces with light immediately, because we don't want them to be refilled, if you will, with the same type of structure that was there before.
That's right, and that's where free will comes in. And with that level of consciousness, then every time we clear, and you know, we'll do a heart command meditation at the end for this. But every time we clear, you're right, it's one of my things I repeat a lot. You must replace it with energy. You can't leave a void. And that's actually where our free will comes in to be such an important part of this, because we get to actually decide that. So then we don't play the role of victim anymore or the tyrant. We find the balance point, and we have the power of our free choice every moment. That's the power of timelessness. And that's where we access this formless energy that's going to skyrocket us into higher consciousness and shift out ego faster than before.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Good stuff. This is my favorite thing to talk about. Good, let's look at our Q&A board here. Dakey says, simple new choice for me is, in allowing the disassembling throughout my field, to then simply choose to love a little bit more. Whatever that means, as I fill my field with that pure intention, it's working, and I see measurable results in the changes in the people and events around me, and in a more pleasant way, I feel one day to the next. Wow, that's amazing. That gorgeous unconditional love, filling our fields with that love, with any quality of light that works best in that moment. So qualities of light, happiness, joy, peace, health, healing, regeneration, love. And then that's the power. We get all that access. That's the power of our free will, and that's the job. That's why we're here. Amazing. Good. All right. Let's talk about our families and friends, because all of us are pretty darn awake here, but not everybody around us is, and that's okay. They're on their own journey, right? There's nothing wrong with how people are around us and what level their soul is at as they discover all the facts that you and I have been looking at today, but it can be really frustrating when you're around family and friends, and what's the thing that they usually talk about? Usually it's the past, isn't it? I mean, if we were all in a room together, I'd have you all raise your hands, and and I'm pretty sure all of us would say, yep, that's true. Probably the number one sort of topic that gets brought up around family and friends is the past. Now, you know, it's normal for people to get together and then catch up about what's been happening, but it's also incredibly normal and common for people to keep going, and looking at the past all the time. And, you know, for those who are more and more trying to stay in the moment, trying to stay awake, trying to zoom in and out, this can be incredibly irritating. So I'll give a good example. At one point, my own teacher, she nailed me, and she said, Elizabeth, I can't stand it anymore. I can't stand when you talk about the past. You just do it way too much. Stop it. And I realized that, indeed, she never talked about the past, that when she would, it was in teaching mode, and she was giving specific examples. But otherwise, she stayed completely in the moment. And she had learned this from her teacher as well. So a lineage of thinking around this, staying in the moment with your thoughts, with your actions, and with your voice, of course. And so this can be quite the interesting shift. I was noticing this in myself, catching myself a lot. And then finally, I broke through this energy, and I was able to really profoundly step into the moment in a way that I hadn't before. And then I started to notice that my nanny, she would come to my house and talk about the past a lot. Pretty much that was the only thing she'd talk about, was her past. And so I started to realize, oh, I see, this is how Lucia feels when she's around me, talking about my past. I get it now, because I can barely stand it. And so what I did is I said, well, I'm obviously not the same kind of person. I'm not going to bite her head off about it, but how can I approach this in a way that's going to be easy for her to understand and actually something that she might enjoy? Because my beautiful, sweet nanny, she is just starting her spiritual path, my friends. She's just at the very beginnings of this kind of consciousness, and it's beautiful. And I enjoy watching that, because you know what? If my nanny can get stuff, if she can totally step into something, a lovely woman who's really never hardly left her county even, you know, let alone her little bitty tiny town in Kentucky. If she can get what I'm saying and then put it into practice, then I know everybody else can. She's like my beautiful kind of spiritual guinea pig for different techniques and trying to figure out what's going to work for the average person that's not going to scare them at the same time, right? We need to be gentle. So I asked myself, all right, how am I going to approach this? So what I found was two things. First, I realized that when she would talk about the past, her face would change like she was in pain. And as you know, when we discuss those sorts of things, that pain can be very real and grounded in the body. And so I thought, oh, that's it. I'm going to actually point out how much pain she's in because she's leaking energy into the past. And that's going to give her the desire to stay in the moment where it's much more pleasant and where she has a lot more power. And so I said to her, hey, Casey, you know, I'm noticing that you're talking about this event that happened in the past. How does it make you feel right now when you're talking about it? And she dropped in and she said, well, it makes my heart and my stomach hurt. You know, her belly, her heart and gut were hurting. Makes my heart and gut hurt. And I said, you know, I think that your body's trying to say something to you. I think she's trying to tell you that by looking at the past or trying to relive it or rehash it, you're actually causing yourself more pain. And your body's trying to let you know, hey, I'm in pain. This hurts. Stop. And her eyes got big and she said, oh, I didn't even think of it like that. And I said, what if we were just to try to speak about the moment? And she said, I don't know if I can do that. And I said, all right, that's okay. What if we made like a parameter about what we're going to talk about together? I said, why not do like a 24-hour buffer zone? You're allowed to talk about the past 24 hours and the next 24 hours, but that's it. And she's like, okay, I think I can do that. So she actually started doing that. And you know what? She completely implemented it. She never talks about the past unless it's the past 24 hours. She never even talks about the future, really, unless it's plans over the next 24 hours. It's changed everything and made our friendship much more interesting and much more beautiful for both of us. Because first, she's capable of being in the moment where all the power is now. And she's not causing herself any pain or bringing all that stuff or junk into my field too. And so that is one of the most beautiful things I've ever witnessed, that she could totally do that. Now, is it easy for us to say those kinds of statements to everybody? Certainly not. Let me give you another trick. So my mother-in-law, she's not somebody that I could say, you're just hurting your own body and your body's trying to tell you you're suffering by talking about the past. And she wouldn't understand that, and that's okay. And so she is someone who very much uses the past as a constant gauge for her feelings, for her reality. And what I found is that when talking to her, of course, I'm in deep compassion. I want her to be happy and to feel happy in the moment. And so this is where a little bit of anthropological training can help. there's something called guiding questions. And it's not in a negative way. You're not trying to, you know, get something out of somebody by using guiding questions. Guiding questions is a technique that's used in what's called ethnography when you're trying to discover certain aspects of culture. So as an anthropologist who studies human beings and culture, going out there to find out more information, you can't use yes or no questions. You got to use guiding questions that open up the conversation in directions that you're going to be able to get more information from. It's a clever way of sort of using language as an archaeological tool. So in this case, consider some statements or questions that can guide that person back into the moment, even if they're talking about the past. So, for example, my mother-in-law was speaking about something that had hurt her in the past and how painful it was. And I found at the root of it that she has a very powerful love for fairness and justice. It's injustices that absolutely drive her mad. It's the unfairness of events or people's choices that make her suffer. And she hangs on to those because she's not being acknowledged for what she truly appreciates, which is fairness, justice, and of course, being able to be connected to that fairness and justice at all times. So she's talking about the past, and in that moment I said, well, I think that that's just a really great example of how important fairness and justice are to you. You really value fairness and justice above all things. So I brought her back to the moment. In this moment, I see you. I see that you value this right now. Not back then, not in the future, now. And she dropped into the moment and she said, yes, you're right. And she just enjoyed being acknowledged. And it's probably one of the best conversations I've ever had with her because I could just simply love her in the moment the way she was. And I gave her a leading statement that helped her bring herself back into the present. At one point, I was at a new friend's house, so I really didn't know these folks very well. And I'm sitting on the porch, and my friend, her mother was there, and her mom was sitting there complaining about her family members in the past and stuff. And I knew that because I'm not friends with this person, that I can't really do something like that. I couldn't give a leading statement. Maybe I could have tried harder and found some interesting question that would have brought her back into the moment, perhaps, if I'd worked a little harder. I was being a little lazy, perhaps, in that moment. But I just was sitting silently listening. And my friend comes over and she said, well, you're not talking very much today. And I said, you know what? I'm just not feeling very talkative at the moment. I'm trying to stay in the moment. And she just recognized that and sat with me in the moment, and we could just be together in that moment, even if it was silent. And it kind of brought both ladies into the moment by just me saying, I'm just trying to be in the moment. So I wasn't dragging anyone else into it. I was just telling them what I was comfortable with. And in that moment, it was just telling them, hey, I'm here in the moment. I'm enjoying this view in the moment with the water and the light and the air and the earth. And they were able to feel that. It's actually very profoundly attractive. And when people get brought into the moment, there's an incredible peace that comes. There was a peace over my nanny Casey. There was a very beautiful peace that came over my mother-in-law and my friends that I made. And this is something we can do gently. with the people around us to bring them back into our most natural and powerful state, which is to simply be in the moment. And it can be so amazing what comes out of that. So there's three different ways to work with your family and friends and bring them into the moment too. And watch how your discussions and how the energy with these folks changes. It can be really beautiful. So what are your thoughts about that? Does anything come up? Any questions? And I'd love to speak with you if you'd like. Press star 2 to speak with me live or type in into the Q&A board. So Celine says, so timely, Elizabeth, I just had my husband going into his depressive funk this morning, saying it's always been, it's always will be. His default life is a to-do list of drudgery, and he'll never get to be in a place where he can do what he actually wants to do, still practicing holding compassionate space for him. Frustration was more of what I felt. Loving you and your class. Of course, Celine. So in this case, you know, folks, they do end up sometimes, they feel very victimized by time, don't they? I mean, we're really taught to just hate on linear time. They feel victimized by their to-do list. They feel victimized by their past. I can't seem to get out of this depression. It's always been there, and it's always going to be there. That's some serious leakage of energy, right? So simply ask him, if you could bring your consciousness into the moment right now, what's one thing you can do right now to help yourself feel more empowered? You know, the opposite of that depressive drudgery is empowerment. What's one thing you can do for yourself? And he might have a hard time thinking of something. Help him brainstorm. That's a compassionate thing we can do. And then you can also say, what's one thing you can do to help yourself feel like you have a lot more say over the future? What's one thing right now that you can do? Perhaps writing that to-do list so fully and then just embracing it the way it is and just accepting it, saying, you know what, there's always going to be things to do. At one point, I noticed my own husband, every single time we'd walk outside, he would literally, like, we wouldn't even converse about anything. And he still kind of does this. But as we're walking around, he'll point at stuff. I need to do that. I need to go do that. I need to do that and that. And it's like, wow, okay. That's causing incredible stress because suddenly the mind and the heart and the body start freaking out. Well, we can't do all of that in the moment. So a better question would be, what's one thing you can do right now to just simply get something done in this moment? And then that to-do list, once you accept that it's simply always going to be there, there's a huge amount of surrender to that. And that's where he gets depressed because he's stuck. He feels like he's supposed to somehow get every single thing done and that there's going to be then this magical time where he has nothing to do. But ask him, hey, even if you didn't have anything at all on your to-do list, would that really make you happy? Probably not. Then he would feel bored. So the problem isn't the to-do list so much as it's his whole embodiment panicking at the density of trying to put all his energy into a future that's not real. Point that out to him. Maybe he'll be able to look at that to-do list a little differently. Just say, hey, there's always a to-do list. That's the fun part. The fun part is then asking yourself, what in this choice point, what am I going to choose to do? What am I going to choose to do, and how can I heal myself? How can I help myself surrender to the incredibleness of the moment instead of feeling victimized by my own to-do list, my own goals, or feeling victimized by my own past? Good. I think that ought to be a good place to start, Celine. and I hope that it helps him, because I sure know how troubling it can be. I myself was literally just freaking out on Friday about my crazy to-do list too, and I had to use these same techniques on myself, calming myself down. Okay, one thing at a time. What's one thing I can do right now? My to-do list was so long with such difficult tasks that actually you're going to take a long time to do, like taxes. you know, that's not something I can do in one day. And it built up, and then having physical pain on top of it made me feel really overwhelmed. So I asked myself, how can I help heal myself in this moment? And how can I stop worrying about the future and finishing this crazy to-do list? And you know, what I found was that it wasn't to go tackle my to-do list. It was going to sit my butt outside and not do anything and connect to the earth for healing. So that's what I did. And then, once I did it for a couple of hours, I found that, lo and behold, I had a whole lot more energy, a lot more focus, a lot more emotional stability to then go do a few things on my to-do list. And that's something that I think everybody goes through. So I'm still practicing too, but that's why it can be so profound, because we're all forerunners together. We're all at the edge of consciousness together. And the more we can share about how we're doing and what we're doing, what works and what doesn't, and our own vulnerabilities, well, the better everyone else around us is going to be able to navigate, right? And that's a really wonderful way we can affect each other's timeline, is by navigating together in that mindset. Good. Yeah. And so Celine says, even though I asked him to reflect on his realistic, that his mindset is causing him suffering, that isn't working. Right. Well, you know, when people are in it, Celine, they really are in it. Little chunks at a time, helping him with nature's aid, I asked the trees we were passing to shower him with their love. Exactly. Sometimes you can't pull people out of their hole, Celine, but here's the thing that's so important, too. Make sure you don't go into the hole with him, right? Don't go in the hole with him. That won't help you at all. You can't allow all that light and power and formlessness to move through you if you're down in a black hole. So make sure you're always at the edge of that consciousness and that you're giving him ropes. You know, that's what we do in relationship. We're throwing a few ropes. Will he take them or see them? Not always. Sometimes it's really hard for people because they're down in there so deep. And they think that that's the way it's always going to be because, well, in this lifetime, probably it has been that way for so long. But don't stop. Give him all that unconditional love. Just keep shining your light, and it will slowly lift him from the bottom up, the foundation up. His foundation is going to change. It's going to become more formless and more light. It's already doing that. The planet's doing it, so you know, even if you weren't doing it, it's going to be doing it for you and him too, equally. Just watch and wait. Hang out with that big field of yours and fill it with all that unconditional love and stand in it. Sometimes there's nothing you can say. You can only be. Just be that love in that moment. And slowly it's going to lift him from the foundation up into light. And he might struggle with it. He might. Some people do. There's going to be shadow pieces that are going to become really obvious, right? When there's more light shined on something, big shadow chunks come out, don't they? Be there for him. Help him process. Help him tap into his body and use his body to help him. Because his body is part of nature and can bring him back to that connection. And again, sometimes you just can't simply say anything. You just have to be it and just show him what that looks like. And that was how my husband is too. And for him, just to be in the field as I continue to hold him and my whole family, my house, my farm, in my field, all the beautiful people I serve, I hold them too. I just make my field bigger and bigger and fuller with more and more formless light. And then we watch. We watch what it does. And my husband has completely transformed in the 6 years that I've known him. He's not nearly at all the same person. And if he can be transformed, then certainly anyone we know can. Yes, very good. And you're right, Celine. We are serving each other ultimately, especially in these relationships that we have with everything around us. So Dakey says, in the moment, time falls away, and along with it, our long-held identities are no longer important. More important than is the experience of the moment shared with one another. Can you talk some about the connection between time and our identity? I experienced these two things unraveling simultaneously. Absolutely, that's for sure. And Dakey also says, all stress is an unraveling that's already clearing from us. So then it's all about remembering to fill it up and love a little bit more. And with great stress, a little love turns into huge results. You're very right. So how is this timelessness, this new playing field of timelessness, going to affect our identities? Well, in oneness, we don't have identity anymore. So if you're feeling a little stuck, like, where do I got to go next? What's the next thing I got to do? What's the next marching orders? I'm not happy with what I'm doing anymore. What next? Then you're going to sit down, because you're in an in-between space, right? This is how you know it. When you feel like you're in this weird waiting game space where everything keeps nudging you to shift, but you can't seem to open the next door. And that's what we call in anthropology a liminal space, or I like to call it the energetic coat closet, because you're getting ready to finish the old party that you were in, that you were enjoying, but now you're done. So that door needs to be closed. But then you're getting ready to go to the next party. Both doors are shut. And you're in between these spaces because you need to get ready for the next party. And you need to make sure that last door was shut well enough, right? So that's when you go down and you say, all right, I need to sit down and really look at my identity. For example, I had a group call recently with a very special man on, and he said, I'm having trouble writing my copy for my website. Every time I sit down, I feel so pained by it because I don't know how to even talk about what I want to offer. There's so much I want to offer, yet I can't really talk about it. And I said, well, that's because you're not supposed to be working in the garden anymore. You're supposed to become the garden. And that's oneness. And oneness has a sign above the door, and it says, no one may enter here. Because to be one with all that formlessness and all that light in the source field, we have to then dismantle slowly our own identities. And so I said, sit down and actually make a list. Make a list of all the different aspects of your identity. For me, it's like, you know, I'm a cat owner. I'm a cook. I'm a mother. I'm a wife. I'm an anthropologist. You know, I even named out every single certificate I've ever received. Degree from education I've ever gotten, all the different jobs I've had, you know, crazy long list of aspects of identity. Boy, oh boy, lots of structure. And then we actually release it, do it in some ritual way. Ritual really helps people get through the next door. That's how humans have always got through the next door, was through some kind of ritual. even if it's simply writing out your identity and burning it, whatever you need to do, but just be conscious of it. Be very consciously looking at the layers of aspects of identity, because it is egoic structure. There's attachment to a lot of those parts of identity. I love my cats. I love my children. I love my husband. I like being an anthropologist. I love my own mind. You know, wow, attachment, ego, amazing. So naming the structure can be very important, because then it draws it out, doesn't it? And then we surrender it. We surrender it to the formlessness of the source field in the moment. And then just watch. Watch it all begin to dissolve. And it can be so beautiful and profound. It took me about 3 full days to get really shifted out of my dense identity so that I could step into that next party and that mindset of oneness with all that formless light. And we back into the more primordial aspects of ourselves and our consciousness. We zoom into all of that and find that we are no different from the source field. The source field is us, and we are the source field. And in that state of being, it's not a state of mind, it's a state of being, you access even more light, even more formlessness. And so we constantly can do that work, noticing our own identities dissolving in this, what's happening on the earth, allowing it, surrendering to it. Fabulous. Okay. Does anyone want to speak with me live before we go into our final heart command meditation? You can press star 2 or post any more questions up. Good. All right. Let's go ahead and we're going to step into the final ending of our journey together today in the moment. And we're going to drop into our beautiful bodies, our natural world bodies. We're going to go into the heart. The heart is the entry point of the soul. And we're just hanging out together in the moment, in that zero point, in this beautiful moment together. And let us ask, dear heart, please lift any density or dark energy, anything blocking me from being fully in the moment. Any structure that is in the way of me being able to fully be in formlessness, timelessness, and oneness. Up, down, or out of my whole body and field now. And take a big deep breath. And now we'll replace the energy. Dear heart, please fill my whole body and field with the same resonance of energy and light that the earth is embodying. Fill my whole body and field with the formlessness, timelessness, and pure power and light of the moment. And maintain this effort indefinitely. Now. And take a big deep breath. Beautiful. And we ask for this formless light to fill our minds, our hearts, our guts, to help us on this journey as we shift as a collective, as a part of this beautiful planet and natural world, to continue to answer the grand question, what is love? And act as incredibly important part parts of the source field informing the answer to that question. Good. And so what we've done a little differently here, and you'll notice that my heart command, we added a new phrase. Allow this to be done indefinitely. Let's see. Let's experiment together. Let's see if we can ask the heart to maintain those kinds of programs, those programs of formlessness and light. Let's see if he or she can actually maintain them indefinitely, the command we just asked for, to constantly fill us in with those particular energies we asked for. So that's a new thing that I want to try out and give it a shot. See if that feels right to you and play with it. See if you can get your body and your heart space and your field to maintain specific commands over time. That's the next step, I think, with these heart commands. Very good. That felt really good. I hope that will be useful to you. Awesome. All right. So now we sign off, and I am so grateful that all of you came. I feel like today was so amazing. I actually feel really amazing right now. I feel like this was needed so much. This look at the playground of time, which is actually turned into the playground of timelessness and formlessness, right? And so I bless you so much with my great joy that you've been able to join me on this call. And, of course, blessings to all of those of you who are going to listen to the replay, too. Namaste, my dear friends, and I'm going to go ahead and play a closing song for you. All my love.